In the interest of fairness, RJ O'Connor will now host the next 550 episodes of Motorsport 101. Welcome
Wait,
back.
What?
To Motorsport 101.
It's only confirm fair, man. You've understood that message.
Yeah. Sorry, the team order said so. We've got to balance the book somehow. Welcome to episode 614 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison. Look, RJ, it's more than fair. We're just covering the minus episodes of Madden Johnson when he was here. It works out about right. It's all fair. It's all balanced. As all things should be. Purple rules.
All right. So is this the point where we start plugging all of our like our Patreon and such?
Yeah, we'll go with that. But we'll give it 3-4 minutes first. We've got to let the crowd settle in, and you know we got to get everybody comfortable, and you know we got to introduce all the other bells and whistles and all of that. But yeah, welcome to the first of another doubleheader here on Motorsport 101. We've got the Italian Grand Prix coming up in this episode, and then of course check back in later this week for our MotoGP review of the Catalonia Grand Prix. I keep trying to call it the Spanish Grand Prix, but that region of Spain is really not going to like it if we call it that. It's the Grand Prix of Catalonia officially now, so we're going to go with that. That'll be in our next episode as well later on. But in the meantime, I'm joined as ever by Mr. Cameron Buckley. Hello, sir.
You know, I had to take a year off from it last year, but now more than ever. Well, maybe not in the championship sense. They don't call it the Honda Motor Company for nothing.
Yeah, no kidding. They really have. it was a familiar tale. If you liked 2023, it's literally the moment where the bee comes out and goes, "You like jazz?" And
Zarbon, two or three more.
Indeed. Also joining me, of course, is Mr. RJ O'Connell. Hello, RJ.
I thought you were going to introduce me as the new host of Motorsport 101 for the next 500 episodes. I thought this was the deal that you had just suddenly arranged.
No, see, People Power got it reversed. You see, you're lucky. Your debt has been cleared. Welcome back, RJ. How's it going?
Oh man, back in the co-host role. What's going on? Yeah, back from Austin, full of barbecue. Will be in Indianapolis next week. Full of barbecue that's not as good. It's no offense to barbecue and bourbon. It's just Texas is just that much better at it. I'm sorry. It's like the one of like seven things they're better at that I can actually positively rave about is Texas barbecue.
Look, if you're gonna brag anything on this show, Texas barbecue is high up the list. This is more than understandable. I cannot blame you for that opportunity when it presents itself to you.
I do need to knock off points because, look, I thought going with a side of beans, and not too many beans, I don't want to go all Nancy Mace on it, but what I will say is, like, just a little bit, and even then the pinto beans as a side did not taste good. Thankfully, I got macaroni and cheese as my first side, which was a smart play.
That's the most elite of barbecue sides.
Yeah, you get it's either cornbread or you get the mac and cheese. Either or, those are the elite barbecue side options. We don't do cornbread here, so I always go mac and cheese in the UK. Whenever I have my birthday barbecue, which is now becoming like a Dre tradition in my household, we always go mac and cheese. That's just how you do it. Quite frankly, it's the only real correct answer.
Real.
I was Austin otherwise, because I know you were down there for the World Endurance
soggy,
Championship.
Given what we watched.
Besides damp, obviously.
Yeah, I was not expecting it to be that damp for Sunday. As I was looking at my phone before, like, Sunday morning, Saturday night even, I was thinking, okay, it'll be a little bit of drizzle during the race, but I'm sure it'll let up. And it didn't let up until, like, the last 30 minutes or so. No, it was soggy all Sunday after. And I'll take that over it being 100 degrees in old money and freaking roasting out there on Thursday and Friday while I'm walking in the fan zone to see what they've got set up, including Big Mate.
Big Mate, you love to see him.
What's yeah, we've replaced it with a big horse, because that Mustang is a chunky beast.
Mm-hmm. The thickness. The thickness is very much
the
real with that.
The thick stang.
The thick stang. You love the thick stang. Especially when he got the 1-2 in qualifying. That was like, we were hootering and hollering in the Discord server.
Yeah, not as much as I was when, you know, I don't know how much longer, given recent reports, recent being today, that I get to enjoy this. at least in a world championship context. But the insane Kevin Estor bullshit was alive and well.
I can imagine a lot of people were talking about when James Collado talked with the media in the Met Center saying that that contact should have warranted a penalty.
Oh, I think that's adorable.
That's the Ferrari fan saying that. I don't even need to add anything, honestly.
Yeah, what more needs to be said?
Could be worse. Could be the number 12 Cadillac. It was going so well until it very suddenly wasn't.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. Let's talk a little F1 because we had the Italian Grand Prix from Monza. And it
which I
was,
watched before. Which you watched. I watched it before the WEC was on. Got it out of the way before my coworkers even got into the media center. Sorry to put you all on blast, but it's true. I am the first man in the building out of the three of us.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we had to get through it somehow. Although, to be fair, at least it was certainly a very quick watch. Indeed. We'll talk more about that in a minute. But, yeah, Max Verstappen back in the winner's circle for the third time this season. I don't think anybody saw that one come in on Thursday, let me tell you. But, of course, McLaren making a complete horlicks of things again with a team orders controversy because McLaren's never done that before. No, never. Not at all in the last year and a half. No. And a usual Ferrari post-mortem. We've also got a little bit of Mercedes drama as well, because even Toto is starting to get fed up with his new prize toy. More on that in the next 45 minutes or so. But until then, here's the places you can find us in the meantime. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on Twitter at motorsport_101. If you follow us personally on Blue Sky, you can at Dre Harrison, bscott@social, RJ O'Connell, and cbuckley917, the other usernames involved. You can follow us on Instagram at motorsport101pod. You can also follow us on TikTok at m101_podcast. And hey, you can also check out the website, motorsport101.com, for written versions of all of our content as well, including reviews of the Italian Grand Prix, MotoGP's Grand Prix of Catalonia, and part one of my three-part IndyCar season review, the yearly tradition, as ever, as a good time for all involved. Part one is now out. Part two will be out the same time next week on Monday. We're already halfway through it as I got this. I'm in a good writing flow.
It's crazy. Even the stuff you've written about, the information that accompanies it changes in real time. Because remember, we're still in the midst of silly season.
Yep.
We are, and I've already had to make two amendments to that first part already. Thanks, Robert Schwartzman, for saying, no, actually, I'm really happy here in America, I promise.
You always are when you rep that flag.
At least Ray doesn't have to edit anything about Graham Rahal.
No, that section's locked in. Probably. That's for sure. Check that out if you haven't already on the website, motorsport101.com/blog. And it'll be interesting to see if that part makes the final edit or not. Also, you can follow us on our Patreon page, patreon.com/motorsport101. You can back us at the $5 level to get all of our content in. You can also back us at the $10 tier to listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded, as Kira, as Raptor, and as Jason are doing so right now as we speak. Hope you guys enjoy the show and the references we can't say directly on the podcast. So without further ado, let's get into the Italian Grand Prix.
This Grand Prix was simple. It was one of the simplest Grand Prix we've ever had, with a complicated finish. Max Verstappen took the early lead from pole sitter Lando Norris at Monza, and he pulled out a 6-second lead in the first half of the race. But with 15 laps to go, Max switched to hard tires while the McLarens waited to put the soft tires on. Norris was given priority to pit first, but gave it up so that Piastri could ward off a possible undercut from Charles Leclerc. Norris came in, but a faulty wheel gun dropped him behind Piastri in third. And McLaren then asks Oscar Piastri to concede the position to Norris, which he obliges, leading to Norris finishing second, Piastri third behind Max Verstappen, a dominant vintage performance, winning the fastest ever Formula One race in the 75-year history of the World Championship by 20 seconds. The race itself was only 73 minutes long at an average speed of 155 miles per hour.
This
Okay.
only one day after setting the fastest ever lap in F1 history. Yes, he beat the W11's track record from 2020 in the last year of these cars. Ignore the fact that the track's been resurfaced and definitely
yeah,
is faster than it was
a 119.7, and that was an average speed of 164 miles an hour.
Schmoving.
Yeah, crazy stuff.
So I'd ask how impressive that was from Red Bull, but I don't want to talk about the other Red Bull performances. I'll just rephrase it. How impressive was that from Max Verstappen?
That was old school Max. He just he took pole and he lost the lead at turn one, and then took it back and fucked off.
Yeah,
he was never seen again. I did find it adorable that after he puts Norris on the grass, Norris just decides, okay, two can play at that game, and just breaks 20 meters too late for turn one, runs him right off the road, and that forces him to get back up the place.
Classic rule. This is what
rules
you guys
of
wanted,
engagement,
right?
Baby.
This rules is what you nature. Guys wanted.
He actually ended up on the curb where Max ended up in 2021 racing Lewis.
Oh,
only
yeah.
There's no giant sausage curb there, so we didn't get rule 34, nose down, gearbox up.
Mm-hmm.
No exceptions.
No exceptions. Yes. Boots, asses, Honda Motor Company, etc. And kind of a product of a couple different things. Generally, we've seen the RB21 is happier as you peel the downforce off. It's a little bit of an easier car to balance. In this window, it seems to still have the aero efficiency of its predecessors. Something that last year's car didn't. Monza was a disaster for them last year. They could not get the car to turn in without snapping and trying to kill both of their drivers. New floor this weekend. They cut the rear wing off even more than they already had, bringing it into this weekend, and gave him more front end, and Max could live with it, and Max could get it around the track, and just every time we got to a straight, he was just bleeding the time out of the field.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, if you were watching the race itself, like and watching Sky's coverage of it, Martin Brundle admitted he got a text from Christian Horner during the Grand Prix, and Horner has said to him, "Listen,
oh, you don't want to open those." Whoa, my bad.
Whoa. Again, it'll be interesting to see if that makes the final edit. But,
oh, that's going to be a tremendous, tremendous end of the year blooper reel clip.
Bang! Bang! What a shot by Curry! No, I was going to say.
Re-rack that one, man.
So it's only the second biggest shot that's been made today.
No.
Oh, now this is definitely not making the final cut.
Oh, I think it will be. No, I was going to say, like, Christian Horner sent a text message, which is normally a dangerous bit of territory to walk on, but he sent it to Martin Brundle during the race. Thankfully, it wasn't his penis. But what he did say in that message was that they'd actually been working on the low downforce package since that Grand Prix last year, where arguably it was Red Bull's worst race of 2024, and they were really, really struggling. But they've been working on it since then, and this was the first time they've really had to go and use it alongside the new floor, and it worked a treat. It really did work out. So a tip of the hat to Pierre Wachet and the aero team at Red Bull, because this was the best I think the Red Bulls looked all season, quite frankly.
When you can get it into that balance window that we know Max likes with the too much front end, he can still do the classic Max magic with it without torching the tires. He can get lap time out of just about anything, but the way he's had to work that car a lot this year, he just ends up chewing the front tires off the rims. To mention something about the other Red Bull, it wasn't great. It wasn't great.
I'm going through this shit again, man. I went through this for years.
Well, they were on. Honestly, qualifying didn't go too bad for Yuki, but then didn't really have the speed to get through the pack in the race. Came out of the pits, fought Liam Lawson, got a whole bunch of floor damage. And if you've got floor damage at Monza, with how much you've already cut the downforce off of these things, you're in for a long afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And it was. And it hurts. And that's all I'm going to talk about it, because if I talk about it anymore, I think I'm going to cry.
You know what? I've heard you, Cam, before we move on to the next point, I need to say something here. Now, you've gone on about how much of a mistake it is and how awful it is that Red Bull and Max Verstappen specifically are going to sign up for 2026 with a Ford Red Bull powertrain that we don't know if it's going to be any good. Probably not. But I'm out here thinking they're giving those Honda power units to Celtic Shaq and Lawrence Stroll. What's
they're giving Hondas. Honda, there is two pieces of that Red Bull that I know are still working. The bit shoving it down the road and the guy in the one car turning the steering wheel. If nothing else is working on those cars, I know two components that are. I think Red Bull's going to feel real bad about it, because everything we've heard about the Ford Red Bull engine is that it's not going to be where it needs to be. And Honda, well, 2025 Paul George highlight reel.
I was going to say as well, Lauren Mekkie has talked about it during the weekend, and even he was admitting it would be an unrealistic expectation to expect their power unit to be on the same level as Mercedes and Ferrari, their main competition for 2026, which, again, is pretty much... Like, I already like Lauren Mekkie because he's not bullshitting anybody here. He openly was just
He's a technical guy. He's not really going to sugarcoat much, and he's basically said, yeah, we've got work to do. And if they're already thinking that they're off of Ferrari, who they themselves have not sounded that confident about the new rules, I don't think it's going to go so well.
It takes time. Remember what Honda power units looked like when they were attached to McLaren's? Decade ago. Yeah.
It's been a decade since it took a while. It's been a decade since GP2 engine.
That man ruined international relations between engine supplier team and himself, and it came back to bite him in several Indy 500
attempts. And I mean, look, like, it took Honda three major redesigns, really four, to become a title contender, and it took them also coalescing all of Honda as a company, their jet division, their motorcycle division, and their racing divisions over in Japan with the GT500 engines to all work together on this to get it to work. It took a while, even under those circumstances, and also in a literal infinite budget.
Yeah, that's my tangent for today. I don't know what I look forward to less: the second Red Bull seat with Ford powertrains, Ford racing powertrains, or those Honda power units not giving Fernando Alonso at age 206 his first win in over 13 years. Because I say this as an Alonso fan, it's not happening. It's done. We're done here.
It's LeBron James and Space Jam: A New Legacy.
It's a shame because Alonso was driving his nuts off in that race in the points until he drove over a curb the wrong way and it broke his front suspension.
He didn't even drive over the curb the wrong way. It just went.
Yeah, just out of nowhere, just pop.
Yeah, it's crazy. To say nothing of Nico Hülkenberg, who didn't even make it around the formation lap before he was forced to retire from the car. You know,
hydraulics.
Yeah. I saw the Instagram post that Sauber had to take down, and I gotta say, it's just too powerful. Maybe it was just too powerful after all, but I think we're dancing around the big topic. McLaren rules. And look, this one specifically is always going to be a lightning rod of controversy. Allow me to be the mediocre white man on the podcast and play devil's advocate for a second, because as soon as Lando Norris gets the benefit of one of these, the lava's going to come flowing. Because think about it. Norris has been McLaren's guy since 2017 when he was in European F3. He's been the apple of their eye for almost a decade. He's been with this team his whole career. He got the long-term deal and everything. And Oscar Piastri was a guy they never thought they could get, but they got him because
Alpine write their contracts on tissue paper.
That's right. And who is Oscar Piastri, the protege of? Oh, just Mark Webber, one of the most notorious number two drivers in recent Formula One history. The guy who was involved in spats over team orders with him and Sebastian Vettel for like the last 4 years. And like, I imagine for some people, this is when the ball dropped for them and they realized Oscar may be leading the championship, but that's the moment he realizes he's Rubens, he's Mark, he's Felipe, he's not number one guy.
I
You
completely
know,
disagree.
me too.
Teeing it
You
up.
know, the worst thing is McLaren doesn't have it in them to do that. 'Cause this is coming from a completely different place. I think Zach Brown so desperately needs to be liked. I think McLaren as a team are so desperate to be liked. And anything that could be perceived as unfair, they are trying to avoid by any means necessary.
Yeah.
Even if it means committing something that isn't fair, because it's not on Oscar that Lando had a slow pit stop.
Yeah.
And
it's not a
someone at
Lando that
McLaren
ran up.
needs to just figure this out for a moment. Motorsport is not fair.
Dog, it never has been. What's next? You're going to ask Oscar to just detonate his engine by revving it up to 24,000 to make it fair to balance the books for Lando's retirement in the Netherlands?
I've got some thoughts on this. I've been saving myself here on this pod for the most part. The thing is that the startling irony of what's becoming papaya rules is that Zach Brown is trying so hard to make this a happy fun times team that everybody gets along. And look, a part of me actually respects the fact that everybody involved has bought into this largely for the most part, since the two of them have been in the upper echelon of Formula One since really the start of 2024, that everybody has kind of bought into this shit. But you will never be able to convince me that it's not completely ridiculous that McLaren asked the championship leader, with a man with a 34-point lead going into this race with 8 races to go, and tell him, please give up a 6-point swing to help your teammate out because we screwed up one of our driver's pit stops, and then Oscar obliges to it. How is that not weird as shit, quite frankly?
It is weird.
Max Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton tried to kill each other here 4 years ago.
They would die for this stuff, man.
Are you willing to die for this turn? Somebody will.
Yeah, look, it again, a part of me respects the fact that Zach's got everybody on that page because it is fucking crazy to me, right? The ironic thing about all this, though, is that by Zach trying so hard to be quote unquote fair, what he's actually doing is he's only going to pour gasoline on the fire of both respective fan bases who think the team is actually favoring one driver over the other. It's ironic. Zach is trying too hard in the grand scheme of things. Listen, your team is not going to be perfect. These things happen in Formula One, right? Like, perfect execution is virtually impossible in this sport. There's human error. People are going to screw up. It happens every once in a while,
Yeah.
right? My concerns about this is, one, how far do you stretch the definition of fair? Because we just had a Lando Norris cut oil line that just cost him at least 18 points out of what happened in Zandvoort and has just made Oscar Piastri an odds-on favorite to win the championship now, right? I didn't see anybody out here atoning for that after McLaren made an error of the way it packed Lando's chassis, right? Now, I'm not saying that, you know, that's something that they should rectify, but what the precedent that they're setting is potentially an alarming one. Like, if the gap was 10 points rather than 35. Would Oscar have been so keen to give up that massive point swing? I'm not so sure. If it was the second to last Grand Prix of the year, is Oscar coughing up that second place? I'm not so sure on that one either. Ultimately, we are here to win the World Championship. This is the Drivers' Championship battle, the ultimate prize of being in Formula One, and it's more than obvious that it's going to be a McLaren driver that wins it one way or the other. I can't believe that they are giving up such blatantly obvious advantages here. And honestly, I feel like Zach is delaying the inevitable. I know these two are largely
someone's
quite
gonna have to lose this championship at some point.
Right? They can't be co-champions. It's not the first year of the Indy Racing League.
Get out of my head.
Remember Le Mans a few years ago when the number 7 Toyota, because of course it was the number 7 Toyota, had a tire going down and they changed the wrong tire?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
You know what Toyota didn't do? They didn't tell the 8 to park up on the side of the road so the 7 could get their win back.
No, because wasn't that the year where Alonso was in the 8 car? So you know they wouldn't have asked him to park and pull over. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, sure.
And the funny thing about it is, for all the people that want to insist there is a bias one way or the other, that they want Lando to win the championship, like, the thing is that they've already been inconsistent in the way they've managed quote-unquote papaya rules. Let me go back a little bit for a second here. What happened in Japan when Oscar Piastri was running third? He asked for a swap. He was declined. Mm-hmm. What happened at the British Grand Prix at Silverstone earlier this year when Piastri got a 10-second time penalty for brake testing Max Verstappen behind a safety car? He asked for a swap.
It was declined.
So what precedent are we allowed to swap the cars around under papaya rules? How far are you going to stretch that definition to, quote-unquote, make it fair? The fairest thing, in my opinion, that McLaren can do in regards to team orders is shut the fuck up, leave both sides of the garage separate, and let them race. It really is that simple.
They're so scared of being perceived as biased that they're doing things which could be perceived as bias.
And not to bring up old lava, but 10, 15 years ago, McLaren was always thumping its chest about, we are not the team that resorts to team orders. We are the team that lets our great drivers race on equal terms.
They're still trying to do that by enacting team orders to make sure they're still fighting fair.
We're having the same arguments we had in 2002 about should we ban team orders from the sport? We already figured out we can never put that toothpaste back in the tube 15 years ago.
Fernando is faster than you.
Yeah, check the gap between Alonso and Mazda in that year's championship.
Yeah, it's... McLaren are trying so hard to be the happy fun times, we're all going to get along team. And I know certain elements of the McLaren fan base love that sort of predacious brag that they've got two number ones and at the moment they're all getting along. Yep. This is not going to happen forever. It's impossible.
At some point, someone is going to lose out and someone's going to be sour about it. And they have a right to be. It's a world championship. And next year is never guaranteed. Next year, a whole lot of people are expecting a Mercedes bloodbath.
This might be Lando and Oscar's, for now, last shot at a championship. We just don't know what next year is going to look like. And you're asking a world championship leader with a healthy lead to give up points to help out his direct competitor.
Joel Embiid was taking time from his busy schedule of not playing basketball to weigh in on this. That's crazy.
Oh, it would have been. I was half expecting a comment from noted not New York Nick Ben Simmons.
It's a very bizarre situation. Like I said, for the start of this segment, a part of me respects the fact that they've actually pulled this off, that everybody is largely bought into this idea, it will not last. I guarantee you it will not last.
And and this shit would not be going on if Max didn't have a pair of really poor races a couple of rounds ago and was still in striking distance for the title. They are able to do this. They have been able to afford this by having the kind of performance gap that they do. This is a bogey track for us. We finished a relatively dominant second and third over everybody else.
In a season where they've won 11 out of 15.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In a season where we're debating if this car has credentials to be one of the best Formula One cars of all time. Again, I've said this car does nothing special other than it's really, really fast. But the success speaks for itself this year.
You can't keep continuing to hold everybody's hand, sing kumbaya, and hope it all works out. There only one person can win a world championship. You are not going to be able to keep that genie out of the bottle forever. They are too young, hungry, incredibly evenly matched, incredibly strong racing drivers.
Yeah.
This is just how it's going to have to be.
Yeah.
If you want to make that decision to have a team built on number ones, you have to accept the risk that they are going to fall out and be competitive and have a every man for themselves kind of attitude, because only one man can win a championship. That is how it is.
Yep. McLaren figured that out the hard way when I was just about ready to pop out of the womb.
Mm-hmm. It is what it is. Good luck to them. Speaking of good luck to them, Ferrari.
Notice how this is the Italian Grand Prix and we have not said a word about Ferrari. Well, they had a special livery inspired by Niki Lauda's mid-70s 312T.
It was beautiful.
Yeah.
It was beautiful other than the HP logo interrupting the lines on the engine cover. They allocated two Monza-specific rear wings, and their classic Ferrari turning up the engine at Monza every year. Let's see.
Spicy fourth and sixth.
Spicy getting their ass completely beat by two other teams. Spicy, checking on my phone here. Oh, they were fastest in FP1 because they had the engines turned up all the way.
Good for them. That is spicy, like the most mild marinara sauce. Okay, it's not the most insulting.
The white bread gives it a little kick.
Not the most insulting thing to Niki Lauda's legacy since the time Lauda turned up at Boeing headquarters during that investigation. But this was massively underwhelming.
Yeah, they had all the straight line speed. Oscar Piastri annihilated Charles Leclerc around the outside on lap one. That's how downforce light they were going.
That should have been the indicator right there that Ferrari weren't getting shit today. Oscar Piastri goes around the outside of that's humiliating. That's getting your ankles broken on a street ball court. Come on, man.
LeBron dribbled it through Thompson's legs.
Oh man! It's playing a game of football on a street ball pitch and getting nutmegged, and then the guy shouts nuts as he walks past you. That's what that is. Man broke his ankles. That is humiliating. And look, Charles did Charles things. He salvaged fourth. It was the best he could have gotten on the table, really, given the state of that Ferrari. Hamilton ended up in sixth. I'm starting to think that heads are gonna have to roll in that Ferrari camp if they don't hit the ground running early next year when the new regulations kick in. They're gonna want Fred's head if this keeps up. I know a lot of Ferrari fans that have already had enough of this regime.
Just one more team principal will fix it. One more second driver, because they're interested in Oscar Piastri, as everyone should be at this point. One more technical director will fix it. One more wind tunnel will fix it. One more belt in the Toyota wind tunnel will fix it. One more engine redesign will fix it. Ferrari, you're not getting fixed, Harrison.
You don't think I don't secretly know this in a team that hasn't won a world...
Dallas Cowboys of Formula One.
Like, you don't think I don't notice as a man who supports a team that hasn't won a world championship in 17 years? I mean, come on now. Like,
it could never be me.
It could never be me either. I mean, who would do such a stupid thing?
But on the bright side, you know, for John Elkann just got community service and a cool 183 million euro settlement for potential fraud.
Yeah, apparently he didn't tell the Italian government he picked up a 750 million inheritance from his dead grandmother. And that's only the second shocking bit of news to come out in this podcast recording.
Well, all the other bits not that shocking if you really know about it. Again, Patreon.com/motorsport101. Ferrari is not looking so hot. Disappointment, immeasurable sadness, etc.
Here's the deal. If Ferrari weren't going to win here, dumping an entire aero package, engine run, special livery, what have you, I don't know if they're winning a race this year. They won the sprint in China with a car that would have been illegal in a Grand Prix.
They're not winning a Grand Prix. Where between now and the rest of the year are they going to beat McLaren straight up? This was a poor round. This was a poor round by McLaren, and they still comfortably beat Ferrari.
You can never rule out a Baku shit show.
If we're talking Baku shit shows, fate of the universe on the line, Martian's got the death beam pointed at Earth, give me Max Verstappen.
Yeah.
That car, even when the Red Bull's bad, it goes well in Baku.
They find a way.
They find a way, and Max is peak sicko at tracks like that. Anyway, back on topic here. The other team in the top four, Mercedes, who had a pretty equally quiet weekend, a little too draggy for this place, held on to Ferrari for a little while, couldn't beat them.
And the other thing here is Kimi Antonelli finishing ninth. George Russell was fifth, but it's been a year since we first saw Kimi Antonelli in the most impressive FP1 crash on the opening lap of his first F1 practice ever.
It's just so much raw pace, the car couldn't take it.
And look, we knew that there was the potential that he's not the finished product in year one. I think we all kind of expected this. We know the upside, but can you expect all of that in year one? But Trey, tell me that Toto Wolff is not already willing to give up on this dude after just three quarters of a season, right?
I'd love to say no here, but for the fact that even Toto after the race just straight up said Kimi was not impressive, it was just a bad race from him. I wonder if the honeymoon period is already over for Kimi in that Mercedes camp. He's struggled a fair amount, even around that podium in Canada, which was a great result, his best in F1 so far. Around that sort of time, before and after, he's been struggling for a little while now. And they are putting him in increasingly precarious situations. Like, they tried to get him into Q2 on mediums, and that was a very bad idea that they had to abandon halfway through. And it didn't help a couple of weeks ago when we went to Zandvoort, and then George Russell came out and said, oh, it wasn't my seat that was in trouble in those negotiations, it was Antonelli's that was in trouble. And it echoes to me of what I think is becoming a larger problem. And for me, what I think the larger problem here is that the vibes at Mercedes feel off right now. It feels like Toto is trying everything in his power to snag his white whale, and that's Max Verstappen. And it feels like it's an obsession to the point where he's going to alienate the drivers he's got in his own camp if this keeps up. Because no one has talked more shit about their contract scenario than George Russell this year. I've said it before, the only reason we got Verstappen, will he, won't he, talks about leaving a year early was because George said he hadn't even been offered a contract by Toto in Austria. Ironically, Toto's own backyard. That's what set off all those conversations. Because, well, if George Russell's not been offered the contract, is Max going to come next year early? Is that what's going to do this? Like, in that sense, Toto has kind of known exactly what he was doing. There was always going to be a small above 0% chance he could talk Max around into coming a year early. And ever since then, it's been messed up in that George had to complain and bitch and moan to the press whenever they've been prepared to listen about an extension. Apparently they've agreed on one, but it's only for 1 year. George Russell is a genuine driver of the year contender right now, and you've put him on a 1 year extension? What are you doing, Toto? You're asking for this man to quit.
Guy who outqualified Lewis Hamilton 2 of the 3 years that he was there. Guy who is smoking Kimi Antonelli.
Over low to medium heat. We've had 4 years of George Russell at Mercedes, and he's been excellent in 3 of them. For me, he is a top 3 driver on this grid right now. The only guys I can definitively say right now in Formula 1 that are better than him are Charles Leclerc and Max Verstappen. Those are the dudes that are extracting the most out of their packages each and every week.
Even Piastri gets snubbed on this.
Nope. I would put Piastri and Lando right together, right behind. Those three have been wringing the necks of three cars that aren't quite good enough to go for a title.
And it's Piastri's
and getting everything
first,
about him.
And it's Oscar Piastri's first genuinely great season. He was good in his rookie year, but I wouldn't say he was spectacular. Year two, he was good, had a couple of wins, but Lando still comprehensively outclassed him. This year, obviously, is when Piastri's made those gains and for the first time looks like a truly top-end driver. I need more body of work with Oscar before I get there. If he wins the World Championship this year, I'll be more than prepared to put him in that top three because he's had to earn it this year, no doubt about it. But George has been as good as anyone in Formula One for the last 2-3 years now, quite frankly. And I'm not saying that Toto is wrong to go after Max. If you've got a chance to get him, you get him. He's the best driver in the world.
Yeah, one fan base in particular will say that Toto Wolff has been in Max Verstappen's corner for several years without him even driving for the team.
He's wanted him there since 2014, RJ.
It's true.
It's been over a decade of this. He missed out the first time in 2014. He doesn't want to miss out on the opportunity again. This is his white whale. And it's getting to the point where he's alienating a generational prospect and one of the 2 or 3 best drivers in Formula One that has been developed solely through Mercedes and a partnering team in Williams for George Russell's career, who's now entering his prime at 27 years of age and is driving at an exceptional level right now.
Eventually McLaren had to give up the ghost and say, you know what? Maybe we don't want Michael Schumacher after all. Lord knows they tried.
Yeah, just I don't get what Toto is trying to do. He came out the other day and said, if you're saying I'm only going to drive faster with a 2-year contract, then that's the wrong mindset to have. No. Why are you trying to put your star driver under unnecessary pressure? Why? What do you gain from that? Let the man cook. He's driven perfectly well under long-term contracts, and he clearly wants to stay. It's not like he's sitting down with Aston Martin or Ferrari and saying, yeah, guys, come and get me. No, he clearly wants to stay here. He likes Mercedes.
And if he doesn't end up staying there, either of those teams would do extremely well to snag him.
For me, there's 2 better drivers in F1. That's it. Right now. The guy walked into Mercedes and was on Lewis Hamilton's level. What more does he need to prove?
I don't get it. I got nothing else to add there. Let's move on. We got one more thing to talk about. Mm. It's comments from Stefano Domenicali of FOM, who, in the lead up to Monza, announced that the sport is considering major changes to the racing format in the future, including, but not limited to, less practice time, possible reverse grids for sprint races. I think we've all heard these a while, but the big one that we hadn't heard for a while, shortening the Grand Prix themselves. The reason? The need to placate younger fans who have, quote, smaller attention spans. Now, before we get started with this, I just want to make sure we got the Subway Surfers in the lower corner of the screen. All right, there we go. Perfect. So is he right about this, or is he just whack? Because I have a feeling, I think we all know where we're going to lean on this.
See, the funny thing about this, in my opinion, is I don't hate all of these ideas. I'd actually be okay if they shaved an hour of practice off the weekend. I could live with that. I'm actually not totally against the idea of reverse grid sprints either. I've said from day one, the sprint format, ironically, is probably too safe. It's probably a bit too safe, and it probably gives away a bit too much about Sunday. Reversing the grid and giving other teams the opportunity to try and score points and have the bigger teams chase them down a little bit might get a bit more action, might force a bit more aggression out of teams in the sprint. I'd be completely fine with reverse grids in F1. We accept them in F2 and F3, but we can't do it here in the big boy leagues for some reason. I'd be fine with that. Like, ironically, I don't hate all of Domenicali's ideas. The shortening races idea for me is a big no-no. I do not like that idea at all. And I don't like the logic that Domenicali is applying to this situation when he says young drivers' attention spans are not in tune with what the product is right now. See, I don't think that means condensed what you're actually watching down. First of all, there's no proof of this. Like, I'd love to see the hard evidence.
That feels like just a vibe statement.
Right, it feels like code. It feels like, hang on a minute. Like, our surveys and our questions are saying that fans don't have the attention span, so we've got to make the sport shorter. No. You are still, on average, a quicker sport to watch than football, the most popular sport in the world. Because the average soccer game, even with today's injury time, even with the interval, is coming in at about 2 hours these days because we add in so much more injury time on as well nowadays. It's a game of football is now 2 hours. An F1 race rarely hits the 2 hour time limit, unless it's Singapore, really, right? So you've got one of the shorter major sporting milestones, or clearly shorter sports to watch out there at the moment. So I don't buy for a second that young fans don't have attention spans. No, I just think the way we're consuming media has changed. I think we're doing this. I think we're watching them on our phones a lot more. I think we are second screening a lot more. I think we're socializing a lot more during these races. I think we're going on Twitter and seeing the reactions and reacting to it, the instant gratification that comes with sport. I think that is how we're consuming the sport in our modern day and age. Miss me with this whole shit that young people don't have a short attention spans. How many people watch hours of their favorite YouTube and Twitch streamers every week? I watch like 15 hours of Roffle a week playing Balatro, and I love it.
You know how crazy it is? Like the highest performing videos on YouTube are the extra long compilations of stuff that's already been done before. Think about this.
Supercuts.
How many fans of endurance racing will just completely destroy their sleep schedule to watch all 24 hours of it?
Hi.
And I know he's younger than me.
Yeah, like this whole idea that young fans haven't got the patience to watch long sports event. You're talking to a cricket fan. Even the 100.
You're talking to a man who watched an 18-inning baseball game so his team could lose. We won that World Series. It's okay.
We have the 100, the shortest form of cricket played on a large-scale international format, and even a game of the 100 still goes at 3 hours, roughly.
Yeah.
And it's a super popular tournament, and most of the tournament nights were double headers, so you were getting two games for the price of one and spending the whole day in a stadium to watch it. Miss me with this bullshit that young people don't have attention spans for sports. They do. Yeah. I think there's an ulterior motive to all this conversation.
Can I lob something up here?
Sure.
Do you think Stefano Domenicali, as Raptor has pointed out in her chat, do you think he's looking at MotoGP's race times and thinking, hang on a minute, there's sports like 50-minute Grand Prix. We could be like that.
Why would you try and copy a far less popular sport?
That's one way to put it. As Jason points out, yeah, we can watch 24-hour races. It's the issue of the racing quality. But the thing is, like, people will tune in to Formula One whether it is good or bad.
There are people who watch those Twilight LMP1 years of 24 hours of Le Mans where, unless a genuine act of God came down, Toyota was bringing home the easiest 1-2 you've ever seen.
Right. Like, it's not, I wouldn't even necessarily say it's the quality of the product. Like, I've made the Al Murray joke on this podcast before, one of my favorites, where a young 18-year-old comes into the pub for his first pint, nervously shows the landlord his ID. He is indeed 18. He gets his first pint of beer, he sits down and he drinks it, and he realizes it's terrible. And Al Murray's famous joke at the end of that zinger was, quote, "That man will now spend the rest of his life trying to find a good one." That's how we are with Formula One. We know it's going to be mid most weeks, but we will run down our firstborn for a great F1 race.
Nobody is going to tell you how much they hate F1 as much as the people who will die for that country, Formula One.
Right. Tuning into every single practice session, demanding that every session of every test is live televised to engage with. It's not, yeah, there is an appetite for as much of it as possible.
And that's my main point. I don't think this is a cure your young attention fans problem. I think this is a you want your cake and eat it problem, because you want to ride the crest of the wave as to where social media is going, because every social media site nowadays looks the fucking same, and they're all being told pivot to sodding video every 2 seconds. Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, YouTube, they are all going the same way. Short-term video hitting the algorithms. Your stories. Dude,
Quibi was born too early, man.
I know, Quibi, right?
Quibi now might have actually hit.
It still wouldn't hit.
F1 on Quibi?
It would. The thing is, right, every social media site is pivoting to video. At the same time, they want people to watch their highlight videos while also keeping their sport incredibly difficult to watch.
Yeah, because that's the other part, is the having the cake and eating it too, is wanting to plaster it all over social media, but not enough that you don't have to pay a subscription to watch all of it to an exclusive provider in insert region here.
Dre, how much was your Sky Sports package this year?
£36 a month. That's $50 in freedom units. That's
worth
how much
it?
Is. Look, I can live, unlike 3 or 4 million people in the UK, I can live without the Premier League. Nothing to do with my Manchester United fan status whatsoever. No.
Now say that without tears in your eyes.
Shut up. Now, my point is that if you're a young person, chances are you are not going to be able to afford to spend £36 a month. I'm using the UK as an example here. On top of a Sky package, which is normally TV, phone, probably the internet as well, as a one-stop shop provider for a lot of the vitals you need in a house. Paying £36 a month on top of that for a Sky Sports subscription is ludicrous. It's a luxury that most young people will not be able to afford.
Yeah.
If you were worried about young fans' attention spans, how about you make the sport easier for them to actually watch properly? But no, you can't give up your precious number one source of income, which is your TV revenue.
And they never will.
And they never will. Because Sky paid £1 billion for the last set of Formula One TV rights in the UK. They produced the world feed. Do you think they opened their own standalone F1 channel, which is dead for 250 days a year, to share the load, to be generous to young viewers? Fuck no. They did it to be greedy.
Why would these
shit.
Turkeys vote for more ovens?
Oh, depends. Are they trying to overtake around the outside of somebody?
Mm. Look, the commercials on Red Zone lasted just 1 minute. Insane social media graphic meme. I pretty much agree with everything Dre said. God, we're so agreeable here.
Yeah, this has been far too agreeable a podcast other than, like, the McLaren bit.
Yeah.
Still, not the biggest disagreement that was had today.
No, not at all. Somebody thought that Charlie Kirk should live, and somebody disagreed. Funny that.
Hey, you lost the gun debate.
Yeah. My thoughts and prayers go out to the bullet. That's our show on Motorsport 101 this week. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back for our MotoGP Grand Prix of Catalunya later on this week. Until then, I've been Dre Harrison. They've been Cam Buckley and RJ O'Connell. Next Formula One race is the Baku Grand Prix in a week and a half's time. Until then, sayonara.